some sense of appreciation of Torah min Hashemayim. Now, this is certainly a topic which is cannot be done in the scope of the time we have here. There are two aspects, and some of it is written in the introduction over here, and there's a couple of other pieces there in other literature that I'm going to leave here. And there's also it's a webinar which is online, but due to the fact that many people don't have access or claim they don't have access or don't admit that they have access, we have also DVDs here, which I'm sure you could borrow or make copies of. There's no copyright. You do whatever you want. It's a 5-session webinar on inspiring a lasting passion and commitment for Yiddishkeit. And one of the sessions there deals with, in more in depth, with the with the issue of emunah. But basically, the simplest approach is just the, and the reason it's so simple is because it doesn't even, it's not head on. It's not like, I'm proving to you, it's not, adversarial. It's a very interesting phenomenon in history. A fact. This is a fact, and the internet browsers will not be able to deny this fact. Throughout history, there has never been a claim of a religion that there were public miracles that millions of people witnessed, and then publicly the perpetrator of the miracles identifies himself publicly in front of an entire nation and speaks to them directly and tells them what it's all about. Why I did the miracles, why I created you, why I took you out of Mitzrayim, so forth and so on. And lives to tell the story. You know, somebody could make up a story that there was a nation that heard such a thing and they all died out and I'm the only one who knows about it. But that descendants, and more descendants, millions, hundreds of millions, billions, I don't know how many, of people, all of them, they heard from their father, they heard from their father, and everybody knows the historic event. Look in your secular history books. No, exactly. Hashem spoke to Klal Yisrael, but there's a reality. There's a date. We know. It's history. It's as much history as George Washington. It's history. That you can't deny. No one has ever made such a claim. And the question is, why not? They copied so much. Christianity, Islam, they copy many things from us, theological and practical, and they change a hin, they change a hair. One made the Shabbos on Friday, the other one made it on Sunday. They were even afraid to go too far away, you know, from us. But, you know, everybody is... And yet one thing nobody ever copied. They never copied the fact that there was a public miracles, only private miracles. Somebody came back and saw that 400 people saw. Private miracles and private revelation. Forgive me for profaning your halls with this. Muhammad had a dream in the middle of the night, and he said that Allah appeared to him, and now it's time for a new religion. What's his name? Paul met Yoshka on the way to Damascus 30 years after he died, and he came back and said, he appeared to me, and... We're making it, instead of a sect and a cult, we're making it into a separate religion. That's it. Private revelation. The Mormons started with Joseph Smith, someplace in upstate New York, had a revelation. The angel Moroni came to him and gave him the Book of Mormons, and private revelation. All of these religions came later. Why didn't they copy the winning claim? Public revelation. That's impressive. Very interesting. I would even leave it at that question at some point. Come back to it eventually. But it's mind-boggling, such a question. And more than that, when they write their own stories, they include ours. Every Christian Bible, only in Vienna once I opened up, I always look at the Bible, and forgive me, in the drawer there, and I opened up a Bible. It was in German, I think, but it didn't have the Old Testament, only the New Testament. Never saw such a thing. They always, everyone, they print the Tanakh, the Havdil, their version, whatever it is, but it's kimat the same thing. I look, it says, my man, I've seen it, it's Mitzrayim, and Mamashin says it. Forgive me. But so, number one, they don't make such a claim themselves. Only private miracles and private revelation. And they do record for posterity our claim. By the way, I think the reason for that is very simple. I don't know. It's a very interesting question. Why do they do that? At least leave this out. So you're not competing with something that's so compelling. And worse than that, I'll tell you a little story. Yeah, I was once on a plane. I got on, I remember, at 7:30 in the morning in Toronto to fly 4 hours to Edmonton, Alberta, to drive 4 hours to the Canadian Rockies, Jasper, I think it was called, to do a seminar there for you know, outreach to secular Jews. Get on the plane. My seat was the last seat, the aisle seat in the last row. I had 150 people on the plane. And as soon as the plane takes off, they bring me my breakfast. And, you know, very nice. It was a good breakfast. Everything was fine. There was a seat in the middle, and then a guy by the window, well-dressed, looked like a businessman. And he looks to me, and he says, when they bring me my breakfast, "I feel sorry for you." So I said, "Why do you feel sorry for me?" I said, "First of all, this breakfast is very good. Second of all, they're serving from the front, and you're going to have to wait till they serve 150 people to get your breakfast. By that time, I'll be sleeping or whatever I'm going to do." You know, so like, he says, no, that's not what I mean. "I feel sorry that you're bound by those archaic laws of Moses. We don't have to do that. And we have it." He gave me something, he says, with love. I really don't understand what he said. I don't even remember. But with love of man and love of God, and we don't have to do anything else. Very interesting. I said, you know, and he looked like an intelligent man. So I said to him, and I had brought 4 hours worth of work to do, and I wasn't interested in converting this guy, this goy. So I said to him like this. I said, "Let me ask you a question. Do you believe in the Old Testament?" "Absolutely," he said. "It's the gospel truth." It's not true, because the gospels are the, whatever it is. Anyway, what's the difference? But anyway, he says, "Yeah." I says, "Do you know what it says in the Old Testament about a prophet who will perform miracles? Miracles to the extent that it's been established that he's a legitimate prophet of God. And then he says, let's go make a new religion. Do you know what happens to such a prophet?" And he knew. He shook his head. He turned around and he looked out the window for 4 hours straight. Didn't even eat his breakfast, his cold breakfast, by the time they got to him at the end of the plane. The Torah itself lets us know that they can't change it. It's not shayach, such a novi. In other words, really what Torah Misinai is, Leva Shemayim he and Novi Sheker, even the Rabbeinu Shel Olam can't change the Torah. Sends a Novi, proves that he's a Novi. Sorry. A baskoil. Hey, mashkichim a baskoil. It's so ironclad. It's so tight. And the pshat is like this, that not only do they not copy these claims as winning claims on their own, there was public revelation, there were public miracles, but they record ours. Not only that, they also record in the same book, a little bit later, that's in Shmos, and this is in Parshas Re'eh, they also record that there's such a thing as a Novi Sheker, and everything that they're claiming is Sheker V'chozov. And they have no answer to this. I once spent 4 hours on an Erev Yontif with I forgot his name, he lived in Gainesville, Florida. He studied for the Roman Catholic priesthood for 8 years. He was a genius of a man. He spoke 17 languages fluently. He quoted for me in the original Bible, the Greek translation, which is their original translation. He was quoting for me paragraphs, mamish like the guy, not shaykh. He found out when he was in his 30s, he saw something. He went to his grandmother's grave, and he saw some fishy things on the thing there, and he ended up a Shabbos in Yerushalayim by somebody, and he mentioned it to him, what he said, and he said, "Your grandmother, that is your mother's mother, was Jewish." And he became religious. He was observant. He was in the midst of figuring out how to annul his marriage because his wife wouldn't be able to remarry in the church if he divorced her, whatever it was. And I asked him, he was, "Mom, this is the closest I'll ever get to the Pope." And I can't do like some of these rabbis, you know, they get an invitation to the Vatican. So anyway, and I said, "What do they say to this?" He says, "There is no answer. There is no answer. When you ask the question of Novi Sheker, there is no answer." They say, "If you believe in the resurrection, then everything else doesn't matter." And he told me what the resurrection was. He was buried. They came back at night. They found the grave empty. Must have been a resurrection. Simple as that. How did he get out? I maybe had gold teeth and somebody wanted to steal. I don't know. But anyway, so this is why it's so flimsy. It's so flimsy. And they have to bring this? I'll tell you, I think I have a theory why they bring it. Because if you notice the Ramban in Parshas Bo'i, one of the first things he lists there is the emunah that Hashem speaks to people. If not for Maimon Har Sinai, their claim of private revelation would be that much more absurd. God doesn't talk to humans. Did you ever hear him talking to you? So now, it's been done before. What about the problem? What about the fact there's no change? Who's paying attention? Believe in the resurrection, everything else will be okay. This is what we're dealing with. Now, this, in my opinion, is a lot safer to discuss. Why? Because you're not directly trying to convince anybody of something. You're raising a question which allows for self-discovery. Hey, it's very strange. Why didn't they copy it? What's going on over here? And then the guy makes a chen and says, that means, and the same thing in the Quran. You find references to Sinai and all of this. So it comes that the vast majority of people on this planet believe in Torah Sinai. And then if you want, you can tell them another little story that happened to me on a plane. Interesting things happen on a plane. I got on a short flight, I remember, from Los Angeles to San Diego. It takes about 15 minutes. I walked in, I'm sitting down in my aisle seat, and across the aisle was an elderly couple, and they said, Shalom. Gentile people, looked like from the Midwest from their talk. And I said, Shalom. And then their speech, we support Israel. Israel belongs to the Jewish people. We know so, God gave it to them. And we know so because it says so in the Bible. And that was really the end. They didn't try to convert me, nothing. That was the end of the discussion. I'm getting off the plane. I say, Rabbeinu Shalom, Vostut Sechto. Here you have these two goyim, and maybe a billion Bible-touting goyim like them. There's over a billion, I think they say today. And they believe whatever it says in the Torah, that's the truth. It says in the Torah that Hashem gave the Eretz Yisrael to the Jews. Fartik, he did, finish, nothing to talk about. And unzere Yidin Nebuch. What's the pshat? How could it be? How you talking? So then I realized that it's really very simple. And the explanation that I have is based on a medrash, and at a certain point, the medrash stops and the joke begins. Okay, that's such a great joke. Don't get all excited. Anyway, so the medrash tells us that before HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Klal Yisrael gave the Torah to Klal Yisrael, he went to all the Umos Se'olim. You want to accept my Torah? Maksiv Bey. Ah, Loisigzel? No, sorry, that's what we do. Loisinov? No. Lodit? No. Everything. Loisirzach? No. Then he comes to Klal Yisrael. Says, do you want to accept my Torah? Ad kan the Medrash. Klal Yisrael says, how much does it cost? He says, it's for free. Okay, we'll take two. And that's why you got the Luchos over there. In other words, the Goyim, it's very easy to be Ma'aminim. It's for free, like my friend told me. I don't have to keep all this archaic stuff. The love of man, love of God, that's Ebebegendix. Oh, but 613 problems before I even begin? Before I even get started? And Dalet Chelke Shulchan Aruch? And all the modern books that they write after that? It's too much. It's overwhelming. It's not for free. And therefore, unzere Yidin, that know what the burden of Torah Misinai is, will have far many more questions than will people that don't have that sense. Over the years, as we did these seminars, so I used to bring in mixed couples. I'm not saying that everybody approved of that, but I felt it was appropriate. People that were married, a goy and a Jew, and the idea was to get the Jew to become religious, and if the goy wants to convert, that's their business. Invariably, the first one to stand up at the end of the seminar was the Goyish person and say, I see the truth, I want to become Jewish, I want to become religious, I want to become observant. What's the pshat? There it is. They have no Yetzirah. There's nothing against, there's nothing negative. Our people know, they heard, what they heard. They heard Shabbos, 26 hours of prison. Okay, that's what they heard, 26 hours of prison. What do you do all week long? You pray all day long. That's what they heard, you pray. I mean, some people daven up the Gemara, but that's besides the point, But you pray all day long, so what do you expect? The goy doesn't know from nothing, no yetzer hara, no bad vibes, no this. And so anyway, so I think that it's very important that we be able to give this type of thing over. Then one more thing on the same thing. There's a second category. And this category is, I would call this category, Mesira. We have a Mesira, you know, it's very interesting. Somebody here once did it, maybe. I think it was somebody, I'm not sure. We have this thing, Kellerman, Rabbi Kellerman did it. He did his Lawrence Kellerman, I think his name was. He did research, and there's many different chains, but he has this chart of Mesira from Moshe Rabbeinu right down to the last generation. What a beautiful thing it would be to, and we have it, you can get it, if not, we have it accessible, to have your own Mesira down to the Rebbe, and then a name of each one of your Talmidim in the class, and at some point when you talk about it, Parshas Yisroi, or whatever the opportunity is, give out each one. Each one has, from here, to your Rebbe, to you, to your Talmud, specifically by name. It's like, again, don't rub it in. Don't scream about it. Don't make such a big deal about it. But just, I gave this out once, in Beis Medrash, in Yeshiva Bochrum. And I remember walking into a dorm room and seeing it hanging on the wall right by the guy's bed. He was so proud of it. I don't know why I had my name on it. Why should I be so proud? But anyway, it's a beautiful thing. But the idea is Mesira. And we call that testimony. We have an unbroken chain of testimony from eyewitness testimony of masses of people. And by the way, the Torah also tells us that they heard Hashem speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. So there can be no doubt of Moshe Rabbeinu's authority. So they heard speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu too. So now we heard from the Beir Yolam. We told him to stop, actually, because we were afraid. And he authorized Leine Am Va'edo, everyone to know, Moshe Rabbeinu is my spokesman. And when he comes down and tells you what I taught him, you can rely on him because I publicly appointed him. Begam Becho Yaminu Le'olam. So there's a tremendous system of Mesira. Fine. And there's much more to discuss about this, but now's not the time. But the other thing is evidence. You're familiar with the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara says, after the Gemara lists so many of the different simonim of Behemus, and the Gemara says there, I think it's Daf Samach, the Gemara says, Otu Moshe Rabbeinu kenigi hoyo blisteri hoyo? Was Moshe Rabbeinu a zoologist? I don't know, a hunter or a something? You know, how did he know all these things? They were animals that didn't exist at the time, that only existed 10,000 miles away. I mean, chleis, what? Mikan tshuvo le'oimer ein teirem in hashamayim. That's the Lashon HaGemara. It doesn't say mikan, we know, teirem min hashamayim. Teirem min hashamayim, we know, because there was a revelation b'fnei am v'edo in Har Sinai, millions of eyewitnesses, and they wrote it down. And not only did they write down that there was an event, but they wrote down that we saw the event, because the event, the Torah repeats many times, Atem re'isem ki min ha-shamayim dibarti mochem, zechor al tishkach mashero einecho, so weiter and weiter, maybe 100 times. So it's a document that says, we saw these events, and we pass it on to our children, not just one person to his children, but everyone, each one, each family, each aderech ader, no change. The Torah has never been changed. It's very interesting. Rabbi Davis in Hollywood, Florida, once told me when I was in his shul, he said that he brings a sefer, a chassidish sefer, down to fix his sefer Torah every couple of years. And he said that when that sefer comes, he told him that the Reform rabbi also brings him to the temple to fix his scrolls. So the sefer says, I once asked the rabbi, what do you need a guy like me, you know, to fix the... So he says, Rabbi, I just want to tell you, those scrolls are the only genuine thing that I have in this temple. I want to make sure that they remain that way. Nobody ever dared to change it. They say, yeah, you don't have to believe it. You don't have to... Be, be, be. Never been changed. It's an amazing system. The Baal Keira reads a word wrong. And leave him alone with the Shvonos and the Shvonochs. But he scream and yell. There's a word missing. There's a split in the thing. put the gartle on the outside, busy bizyonis to the Sefer Torah, posel inside, and the dinners are supposed to fix it within 30 days. And it survived all the generations. So we have a Mesirah. But, tshuva la'ei la'oimer ein terem in Hashem, after that whole Mesirah, and that's basically the Kuzri. And by the way, the Goyin, even though he tells us not to learn the first Shar in Chobes HaLavov, it's the Yichud Hashem, he says you should substitute the Sefer Kuzri or Rishon, shehi Sefer Yokor Me'oid. So it's a toast to think that the Goyin said you don't discuss Emunah. You don't discuss the philosophical aspects and the proofs and the intellectual this, but Kuzri, Mesirah, that's it, that's where it's at. But if someone, after all that, would have any questions, how do you explain the Mishnah that says, Kol sheyesh loy kaskeses yesh loy snapir, for example? Something that to this very day, you know, oh, they say they found that eel is not a fish. Whatever it is, you're going to have little problems there, but hopefully your kids won't have internet access in the classroom. But there's many things. There's so much information. Nevuah! Did you ever hear such a thing? That we're going to return to Eretz Yisrael after a long and bitter exile? Did you ever hear such a thing? That the Zohar says we're going to return only b'schus hamila. The only thing that those first people that came back, they had no sheiches to Yadus, but the one thing they did, they all did bris mila. It doesn't make any sense. It's barbaric if you don't believe in anything. Poor Shulamis Aloini had to invite all the Chavrei Knesset to the bris of her grandson. You know, like, there's so much of the Nevuah, all the Nevuah. There's going to be a Churban Bayis Rishon, a Churban Bayis Sheni, and all the details of in Parshas Kisova we're going to read. The Ramban says that's Bayis Sheni, but you see in Parshas Hazinu, you see Mamish, if you read it there, you see Mamish, the words of the Holocaust coming forth. Got to be careful with the Holocaust. I'll never forget. I once was a young guy then, many years ago. I was in front of a group of people, and I said, you know, even the gas chambers are merumas in the posuk, because it says ketev meriri, and the malbim who wrote before the turn of the century, and poisonous gas was only used in First World War by the Germans. He says in Yoshua Beseser, he says miketev yoshu tzorim. That ketev means avir arsi memis, poisonous gas that kills. So in the Parshas Hazinu, which the Goyin says refers to that century, which has al she'ein alekai bekirbi, mamish, so many words that indicate that a meramis to the Holocaust. So he says, even the gas chambers. There was a Holocaust survivor sitting right over there. And I remember in anger, he says to me, he screams out, Dem toiva binichem moichel. You know, that toiva that he predicted the gas chambers are moichel. Like, don't get so excited about the fact that that was, you know, you got to be careful when you talk about these things. Oh, but the Maisa, there's so much evidence. There's so much information that no human being could have known. And in this book, you have a lot of that. And anytime you have an opportunity to share that type of information, I think that that can be very helpful. Okay, let's have a little more time. So let's move on. Please forgive me for the run-on. Maybe we'll take some time at the end for some discussion. Something else. What?
Can you keep it 5 minutes, 6 minutes? Like
6 minutes. Yeah, whatever.
But please stay in the room. We have a lot to learn today. 10:35.
All right. I was pointed out. We have a pedagogical moment here, which was completely unintended, and that was dropping a question and not answering it, and that evokes interest and say, oh, the question wasn't answered. Now all of a sudden, someone say, hey, what's the answer? You're always in a better position when you have an audience that's asking you what's the answer, rather than you're trying to shove the information down their throat. So I neglected, thank you very much, Rabbi Kassira. I neglected to talk about this, the issue of how can we best articulate the importance of learning. Since learning is so of primary importance, learning Torah is what, teaching Torah is what you do, learning is what they're doing. In the younger grades, it's not so much of a question, but in the older grades, certainly, they're spending more time, and and they're more critical, and they have other things on their mind. Younger kids, you just have to keep them busy. Older kids have ways to keep themselves busy. They're not interested in all of this, and then you're going to study at home and study for tests and do this, do that. It's too much. So how can we best articulate that? That's not a very simple question. If you use the approach, you have to know what the mitzvahs are, you have to know what the halacha is, you have to know how to do all the mitzvahs, that approach has two chesronos. Chesaron number one, you're talking to me about burden rather than privilege, right? So I should learn in order to be able to keep more mitzvahs, which to me is already too much of a burden. That's number one. Now, I know many people here say, what do you mean, burden, shmurden, it's not true? Believe me, for us it's not true. Maybe for us it is true, I don't know. But for kids, that's the way many, many kids perceive. And especially in a generation that has become so meticulous with our children. We're so concerned about the neighbors, we're so concerned about the shidduchim, we're so concerned about the chitzonius, how they look and how everybody perceives them and so forth and so on, and they're perceiving a sense of burden. I can tell you that I know yeshiva bochrim of serious quality that if you suggest the idea of putting on a hat when they daven, not cholila to wear it, I mean, exactly that. There was somebody who came in who was offering free hats in the yeshiva. No, guys don't have very expensive today hats. A decent hat, cheap hat is terrible, looks ugly, and a decent hat costs you $300. It's terrible, whatever it is, I don't know. Bekitsa, so somebody was giving free hats. So a guy walks into my office, and he says to me, he says, I might be interested, but do I have to wear it? I said, like, why in the world would a guy give it away if you're not going to wear it? I said, maybe Shabbos at least. Since bar mitzvah, I've been fighting with my father, and every time, why do I have to wear my hat? Why do I have to this? And mamish, like, it was irrational, completely irrational. Guy's a nice guy. He said, I'll do it for you. I said, no thanks. I'll wait until you do it for yourself. But that's besides the point. But lemaisa, this pressure, we have no idea how so many of our kids experience pressure. So that's not the way. And number two, how are you going to explain to them why you're learning esoteric gemaras, which to them do not seem to be negeila halacha lemaisa? You'll tell me bava kama bava mitzia, that is negeila, says I'm not going to become a dayan, let alone a rov. I'm not going to become a dayan, and most of this stuff is not for me, and I don't see why it's relevant to me. So it's very important. I think the only way to articulate this is with the following, and I think this will just give us a very quick touch on the third goal, which was privilege rather than burden. And that is as follows. You have to go back to the purpose for creation. You know, one of the things that kids are bothered by, or mostly teenagers, but it starts in the elementary school, is like, what are we here for? What's the tachlis? We said purpose makes me happy. We say, oh, we have a purpose. What's the purpose? I don't understand the purpose. Oh, the purpose is to learn and do mitzvahs. And now what? What's the purpose of that? So you should be able to teach your children to learn and do mitzvahs. Okay, what's the purpose of that? So they should be able to, like, it needs a little more than that. So really, if you go back, and a very, very good text is Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, both in the first perek in Mesilas Yeshurim and in the Derech Hashem, in a number of prokim over there at the beginning, really puts this in perspective. Olam chesed yibone. Hashem created the world only to do chesed. That's all he wanted. Nothing else. He lacks nothing. He needs nothing. And the only thing, his essence, not his need, but his essence, his mahus, is that of chesed. And the mahus of chesed requires doing chesed. It's not just I like chesed, I admire chesed, work fascinates me, I can watch it for hours. I have to do it. I have to participate in it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to do chesed kaviyochel. We understand it on human terms, on divine terms. It's beyond our understanding, but that's it. It's all oilam chesed yibone. However, He created the world with Mishpat. Bereishis bara Elokim. Because Mishpat, and I think this is a very important lesson to convey, is the greatest chesed. The greatest chesed is Mishpat. You know why? Because, you know, imagine I have a yeshiva dinner and I honor two people with the same honor. One guy who's given millions of dollars and millions of hours of work over the years dedicated to help the yeshiva. The other guy who has millions of dollars and never lifted a finger, never wrote a check. And I give him the same award and the same speech and the same praise. There's no question about this. Guy's going to be embarrassed if he has a half a brain. He's going to be embarrassed. What? I didn't earn this. This guy, he did something. He did a lot. But there's a nama de kisufa. If we don't earn something, then we can't appreciate it. And we feel embarrassed. It's not the ultimate chesed. The ultimate chesed is mishpat. The problem is, Rashi brings it at the beginning, it doesn't say he tempered mishpat with rachamim. It says, hiktim midas rachamim lemidas ushotfoy imidas hadin. In other words, Hashem made the world where it goes with din, but rachamim is part of the din. Okay? Because Hashem wants to give every way possible to give us chesed. We should earn it as much as possible. When we can't earn it, He has other systems that compensate. The truth is, there are even systems that compensate beyond our earning altogether. The Gemara says about and that means that even though I didn't earn it, I don't deserve it, but your Mara Almidos will wipe off everything. There's many different things, like the whole different discussions. Bitochen does that. It's all about Hashem wants every way possible to maximize the chesed that He can give. What is the greatest chesed in this world is the connection to Hashem. Now, the relationship with Hashem is the greatest chesed. Now, truth be told, what Sira Shurim says, Mokom Inu Azehu Be'emes, in other words, the ultimate, because there's no mafriim. There's no goof that wants to have food, that wants to have pleasure, that wants to have this. It's all about pure connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we can feel that in this world. And the truth of the matter is that our children, if we can express it and if we can show it, model it, they can also feel that. Hashem's going to help me. Take a little kid. You know, little kids are bigger ma'aminim than we are. And they get it from us, but then, you know, before they get ruined by the world. And I shouldn't say that, I take it back, I apologize. But they're very strong. And then Hashem's going to help. Hashem made it. It's a reality to them. And that reality is soothing. That reality is comforting. That reality gives strength. That reality gives courage. That reality gives me peace of mind. That reality does wonders for me. Add to that, and this is certainly not the place now, but there is there is one book over there about bitochen that might be helpful. Certainly, if there's a koyach of bitochen in the world, where if I put my trust to the degree that I connect to Hashem and put my trust in Him, it's to that degree that He responds to me, and it's to that degree that I find the menuchas hanefesh in life. Those are the two benefits of bitochen. It's a wonderful thing. And kids can, over time, gradually imbibe this message. When we teach them Hashgacha Pratis, they can feel, Hashem, help me. I must tell you, I must share with you one little story. And I believe that in my family, personally, this is the foundation of everything that developed over the years. My kids were very young. We were living in California, Los Angeles. And it was the summer. My daughter asks me, she must have been 8 at the time, my oldest. She asked me for 75 cents. She's going on a trip. She wants to buy a soda. Chinuch was a rough profession in those days. I didn't have 75 cents. So she says, what should I do? This was 10:30 at night. She says, I said, say Tillim. Good parental advice. Real responsibility. Say Tillim. Okay, want a soda? Say Tillim. The kids, okay, she sits down to say Tillim. Debach, what could she do? And she, with her younger sister, who was 4 years old, she's saying Tillim. And in the middle, she says to me, what is this going to help? I need the money now. I'm leaving early in the morning. The little kid says, maybe someone will do something, give you whatever, some stupidity. She comes home. What happened? A friend of hers, Purim time at the Purim carnival, borrowed 75 cents and never returned it. She woke up that morning. This is July, August. This was March, whatever. She said, oh, I never gave the Cohen girl the money that I owe, the 75 cents. And she brought it to camp to pay her back. We have to show our children. Hashem is involved with our lives. And that's not my parents. I care. My poor miserly or Nebuch father who can't even earn 75 cents couldn't give it to me. Oh, but the Rebbeinu Shalom is involved in my life and he takes care of me. And one such matter, and another one, stories, Ashkocha Protis, it changes lives. And today, Baruch Hashem, there's books. I'm not sure all the stories are true, but you know what they say about some of these stories. If you don't believe that they could have happened, you're an apikiris. And if you believe that they all happened, you're a little bit foolish. But anyway, but there's so much out there, and everybody has personal. Pay attention. Teach them to pay attention. Get them to look. Make a project. Everybody brings in a story of Ashkocha from the family, from personal, from this. And once they see Hashem involved in their lives, they begin to feel that connection. They see, oh, it's such a good feeling. I feel so confident. I have a problem. I have a test. I'm worried. I'm nervous about a test. I daven. And it calms me down. They can feel these things. And if we're afraid to articulate them, we should get over the fear and recognize the reality and strengthen our own reality, because this is okay. Now, so they can have this sense of connection to Hashem. Now, but how do you get the ultimate connection to Hashem? The ultimate connection to Hashem can only happen if you're doymeh l'Hashem. If, let's say Hashem is the ultimate Baal Chesed, and I despise Chesed, I don't know what Chesed means, or he's the ultimate source of emes, and I'm a shakran d'oraisa, I can't have a relationship with him. Impossible. I don't know what it means. I can't appreciate the maila of emes. I can't appreciate the maila of chesed. So I have to be in myself those things that he is in order to be able to connect to him, in order to be able to serve him, in order to be able to pray to him, in order to be able to trust him, in order to be able to rely on him, in order to be able to feel close to him, in order to be able to feel a deep relationship with him. That's what I need. How do I get that? He gave us a formula. He says, I want you to achieve shleimus. Chazal say, it's a Medrash Rabbah, someplace in Bereshis Rabbah, lo initnu ha-mitzvahs ela letzarif b'henes abriyos. The whole reason, or elo, only for this purpose, to refine human character. So we have to refine our character, refine our midas, become godly, more like Hashem, more chesed, more emes, more savlonus, more good, more doing, more rachmonus, more, all of this makes us more closer and closer to Hashem. And this is what Torah is all about. When we connect, when we learn the Dvar Hashem, we feel that sense of, I want to emulate Hashem. Now, to take it a bit more sophisticated, and let's make it simple. Yeah, there's a very interesting Rabbeinu Simcha Namachza Vitri. The Rabbeinu Simcha Namachza Vitri says like this. The Mishnah says, Yofet Torah Derech Eretz, Shegias Shnei Mashkachas Ovoin. So he says that the Torah we're talking about is Hilchas Gzela. He says if a person learns Hilchas Gzela and he has Parnosa, it's Mashkachasov and he won't sin, he won't steal, because I know Hilchas Gzela and I have money, I'm not tempted, fine. The question is, what's the Loshon Mashkachasov? Mashkachas? It means he won't be tempted. I have a Parnosa and I know you're not allowed to steal. No, the Torah has the power that puts the concept of Gzela out of the realm of my world. Just as you could tell a class, I mean, be careful. How many of you ever thought to murder somebody? Usually you get one wise guy who's, yeah, I've been thinking about it. Sometimes it's the speaker. But anyway, so, it's what? What do you mean? It's mashkachas. It never dawns on us. It never dawns on me. It may dawn on some people, but it doesn't dawn on us. It's beyond our, it's, and it is what? It's our teaching, it's our learning, it's our way of life. That's just out of the question. Torah is mashkachas ovoin. When I learn Hashem's Torah, it makes these inappropriate characteristics, they become out of the realm. I'm not tempted anymore. It doesn't even think of it anymore. It's not even part of me. Now you'll wonder, what about the Torah? Well, think about it for a moment. The whole Torah is to bring about human shleimus. Everything. Everything brings, all the mitzvahs bring shleimus. Shabbos brings shleimus and emuna. And mitzvahs bring olam chaveira, bring shleimus and all of the midas and so forth and so on. And the yomim tovim connect us with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The more we're connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more we want to emulate him, the more we want to be like him, the more we feel his chesed, his hatova, hatova chartonu, we call it amim. All of it is to connect us more and to make us into better people. Now, think about it for a moment. There's so much. You know what the Rambam says in the Pirush HaMishnayis in the end of Makkos? Hashem chofetz l'man tzidkoi shel Yisroel, Chazal say, l'hagdil Torah v'yadir, he says, really we could achieve shleimus with one mitzvah. One mitzvah brings the ultimate shleimus, but it's hard. Not so simple. Some people are better in one thing, some people have more a nature of another thing, more netiyah, more this, more that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is l'hagdil Torah v'yadir, l'man tzidkoi shel Yisroel. He went to such pains to give us infinite opportunities to purify and strengthen ourselves and make ourselves into a better person, mahu afata, and refine our shleimus, lo nitna mitzvahs el tzarif benes abriyos, again and again and again and again, all to purify us and make us better people. If you want to take it to another level, and again, this is not for the first grade, I don't think, unless maybe, I don't know what kind of first grade is you have over here, but you know, but as you get a little bit older, junior high school certainly, but it's important. The Rashi says at the end of Parshas Bahar that it says Avodaihem, so it's a tzivui, he brings a sifri, a tzivui that a Jew that sold as an Eved should not emulate his Odoin. Shaloi Toimar, Ma Rabbi Oved Avodah Zorah Afani Kamoyu, Ma Rabbi Shefech Domim Afani Kamoyu, Ma Rabbi Mechal Shabbos Afani Kamoyu, Talmud Loim Ravodai Veloi Avodim. So, Shaila is, what's going on over here? This poor Jew, he stole, or he doesn't have any money, he sold this an Eved to a Goy. So he's going to want to emulate the Goy. The Goy is Mechal Shabbos. Shabbos is the one thing he shouldn't emulate, at least have a day off, you know? He's Mechal Shabbos, I want to be. He's Avodah Zorah, I want to be. He wants to emulate his master. Teretz is, everybody knows there's such a thing as the Stockholm Syndrome. When someone is meshabit us, there's a desire to connect. The shibud of Torah creates the desire to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because when we learn, we learn in Almanas Lasos. The Gemara says, the Yerushalmi says, Haloi mit shalom Almanas Lasos, noyachalui shalui nivra. So we're learning Almanas Lasos, and Mimela, I'm connecting to Hashem. And even when I'm learning something which is not Lemaisa, right now. But it's Almanas Lasos. I want to know. I'll want to know how to do that. If I'll have a situation like this, I want to know that. I want to know what's right. I want to know the Dvar Hashem. I want to be able to do what's right. And I mishabed myself to the Masik Shmaitz. Agav, you could explain Eilu v'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim with this. Makes no difference to the Rabbeinu Shalom if you go like Beis Shammai and say Kiddush and then say Borei Pri HaGofen, or if you go like Beis Hillel and say Borei Pri HaGofen and then you say, you learned the Sugya, Shammai learned the Sugya, Hillel learned the Sugya, each one came, was Masik Shmaitz Aliba de Hilchasa, each one came out with his conclusion, he's Meshabit himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I fulfill the conclusion. The concept of being Meshubit to the Borei Olam for the purpose of refining myself and emulating him, for the purpose of being able to have that ultimate relationship with him, is really the most, it's abstract, it's difficult, but it's the most penetrating concept of the importance of learning. But it needs one more thing. We have to let our students know that we're teaching them how to learn. We're not just teaching them information. We hope that the day will come that they will learn enough about the skills and techniques to learn that they'll be able to do it on their own. And they'll be able to learn all the halachas that they have to learn. And they'll be able to learn all the sifrei musa that they have to learn. And they'll be able to discover in the Torah all of the direction for all the aspects of their lives. And that is really the tachlis of what we're trying to do. So I think in that context, when they're learning how to learn, and they appreciate that this is the way to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is the Torah that Hashem gave to Har Sinai, this is the painstaking effort that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave in order to help me achieve my shleimus. Every time I learn a Torah principle, I learn Bava Kamma, Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said, why do we stop by teaching Bava Kamma, Bava Metzia? Because it instills those values. Mazik. I have no right to be mazik. I've a lost item has to be returned. There's Hilchos Shechinah. I don't know if they start with Bava Basra. But there's rights and wrong. There's values. And these become internalized. They become Mashkachas Ovoim. I become that different person. I achieve human Shleimus. And I can connect with the Rabbeinu Shleim. And in conclusion, I would just say, if we talk about perfecting the human being, and don't use the word perfecting too much because then you'll start with the perfectionists and with the psychological problems and all that stuff. But we talk about making a person, you shleimus, they don't know what that means. We're making the person more complete, more whole, achieving the maximum development of his character and his personality that he can. Then a few things happen. Number one, it's the way of connecting to Hashem. And that ultimate benefit, both in the terms of the Menuchas HaNefesh, in the terms of the closest, in the terms of Dovid HaMelech said, V'ani kirvas Elokim li'tov, and in the terms of Bitochon, that I can have a way to get so many of the things I want. And by the way, I believe today that the best route to Chizuk Emunah is Bitochon. I state kol ha'mam, kol ha'beiteach ma'amin, that you have to have Emunah first. That's true. We do. It's in our hearts, buried in every single Jew. I remember not too long ago, a guy came and says, I'm an Apikoros. I said, oh, please, I'd love to meet you. I never met one before, you know. And I've been dealing with them for years. There's no such thing. That the Bitochen is the motivation. The Bitochen says, hey, I can get something from it. There's a benefit for me. You know something I want to believe? And I'm telling you, when I have introduced the concept of Bitochen to Freier people, every Jew has it. That pintle year, though they don't talk about it as much anymore, has not, the fire has not gone out. It's there. The ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim is there, buried inside. And the Bitochen makes a practical reason. So there's benefits, benefits, benefits when we emphasize those benefits. And there's something else too. If we talk about making myself into a better person, then not only does it have the connection to Hashem, and not only is a connection to Hashem very validating, but just the better person itself is validating. Wow, I became a better person. That means I can feel better about myself and I can feel happy. And you can, I think we have to end, and you can test a classroom of kids, and even younger kids, I believe, with the following question. What memory gives you the greatest pleasure? Is it the memory of the best meal that you had, 5 years ago? Or is it the memory of a chesed that you did to save somebody, to help somebody? Something good, something meaningful, something that has to do with gutzkeit, with midas, with human character. And 9 out of 10, I don't know exactly, but we'll admit and say, for the meal, I have nothing. In fact, the memory is frustrating because all it tells me is I want more. It doesn't. The feeling, that still gives me pleasure. And I would dare say, one more nakuda, and that's it. One more nakuda. That feeling can give you benefit even if you don't remember about it. Why? Because every time I do a good act, I elevate my own sense of self-worth, my sense of validation. I used to be a 2. Now I did this big chesed, I'm a 3. And I'm nene from myself at the level of 3, even though I forgot what brought me there. So the good that we do, the midas that we develop, the validation that we find within ourselves, elevates me more and more. And they have to see, and they can see, that learning, the skills of learning, can give me the tools to be able to achieve this, to be able to develop my character, to be able to be closer to Hashem, to be able to feel better about myself, and truly to make me happy. And that's probably the reason why not a lot of learn Torah on Tisha B'Av. Kol Tuv.